Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
You are Locked On Pelicans, your daily podcast on the New Orleans Pelicans. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome to another edition of Locked On Pelicans, the only daily podcast covering your favorite team, the New Orleans Pelicans, and NBA as a whole, available on iTunes, on Audioboom, on Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast from. I'm your host, Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter, coming to you on this now Friday, final podcast of the week, as the Pelicans are deep into training camp at this point, hitting kind of the more of a nitty-gritty grind type part of their training camp, where they're really working on offensive sets, defensive principles. They're into contact practices, a lot of five-on-five going on with the coaches observing and coaching. Obviously, they're coaches. They coach. I'm clearly well paid to do this type of podcast for you all with insights like that. But no, the coaches are out there instructing, tweaking, helping everyone just get better, kind of get into the rhythm and flow, as I talked about yesterday, that this Pelicans offense should be. Still not really getting to watch much of practice. It's just a thing around the league, so don't expect any big insights like that. But what we're trying to do this week is glean what we can from the comments of the players and the little we do see out there. So today's edition of Locked On Pelicans, going to focus on Drew Holiday's role in the second half of the podcast, how he's going to be used in that two guard, sharing a backcourt with Rondo, working off ball while also being on ball at times, and exactly what's the percentage breakdown going to be of that. So we've got a couple of different things to just dive a little bit deeper into his role and how it's going to work inside of this offense that the Pelicans want to run. In the first half of the podcast, I've had a couple people ask about that final roster spot on the team. We more or less know who's going to be on the roster next year, but there is kind of one question mark. And we want to go into that to see exactly who might make it. Is there a chance that one of the guys invited to training camp impress and make it on there? We're going to cover that and more, including some things that are just kind of breaking that involve lottery reform in the NBA. I'm going to touch on that probably towards the end of the podcast as well. So we've got a lot to talk about in today's edition of Locked On Pelicans. So the Pelicans roster is set for the most part. We know most of the guaranteed guys. Basically, you have Drew Holiday, Rajon Rondo, Davis, Cousins, Etuan Moore, Dante Cunningham, the other guards, Tony Allen, Ian Clark, then you've got Darius Miller, Diallo, then you've got the injured guys in Frank Jackson, Solomon Hill, and then the other bigs in Ajinsa and Omer Asik. And those guys are making the roster. It's guaranteed contracts. They're not going to stretch or buy anyone out, anything like that. We're past all of that. Those guys are here. The other name from last season that does have some guaranteed money is Jordan Crawford. He's got $250,000 before, I think it's right around the mid-November. I forget the exact date. They're only paying him that much. And then after that, there's nothing guaranteed. They can cut him and not owe him anything. And he's the guy who's going to have the advantage of being on the roster to start the year. Even though it's quite guard heavy right now, I would say, with Holiday, Rondo, Moore, Clark, and Tony Allen, you know, it's Crawford played particularly well last year, frankly. That's the only other way to put it. You know, after being out of the league for 2 years, and this is going to be a theme here in a minute, Crawford came in, averaged 14.1 shots per or points per game. He shot basically 39% from three on five attempts per game. And he did all of this in 23.3 minutes per game. He was, frankly, just a really good hot scorer for the Pels last year. And it's as simple as that. He was not great defensively. That's putting it nicely. But overall, he played, like we just said, incredibly well. Some of those numbers, though, I don't know if they're going to be able to be maintained. That 39%, it was 38.9, so let's round up and just call it 39%, is significantly higher than his career three-point shooting percentage of 31.4. Significantly higher. He's never been a very good three-point shooter. The best season before this one was back in 2012-2013 with Washington, when he shot 34.5% in 43 games for them after he was traded there. Or traded from there, forgetting the exact specifics. But basically, with Washington, that's the closest he's been. Is that number sustainable? I really don't know. Before this, he was known as just an inefficient shooting player. And while he was much more efficient this year or last season, that's largely due to those three-point shooting numbers. And if those aren't there, I'm not sure if he's going to be the same player or still very useful. I don't know if the coaching staff necessarily trusts him. The big advantage he does have is, you know, he kind of knows his role. He knows that, you know, it's shoot, and it's that simply. He's not trying to do too much. More than that, he accepts his role. He's fine being this role player, the instant grits off of the bench for this Pelicans team, and you have to like players like that. That keeps team chemistry moving. It allows other, you know, to lead by example for other players who might be unhappy, different things. But if anyone's going to get cut, it's likely going to be him, though I think he'll be safe, and we'll talk about why in just a minute. The other name I get asked about a bunch is Perry Jones III, and this was, you know, out of Baylor, drafted by the Oklahoma City Thunder in 2012. I was super duper amazingly high on Perry Jones III. 6'9", not 6'9", 6'10", basically, 6'11". And He just had all of the tools and some injuries, and maybe one leg longer than the other kind of kept him from being drafted very highly. I thought the Pels might take him in that 10 spot the year they drafted Anthony Davis. That's how high I was on him, but just never worked out. He's got pretty poor career averages of 3.4 points per game. 3-point percentage, his career is under 30%, 29.3. 1 year he shot 36%, but it's on 1 3-point attempt per game. The last time he played in the NBA back in 2014-2015, so he's been out of the league here for a year. He only took 1.4 3-pointers per game. He's not here spacing the court, though he did show off range in college. At 6'11", he's not a small forward. He's going to play power forward for this Pelicans team because they need a wing who can shoot, and it's just simply not Perry Jones. And, you know, unfortunately, it's not going to happen. Is there a chance? Sure, maybe. It's not big. The other guy, or another one of the guys they signed to training camp, is Cliff Alexander, and this is a guy not many people are really going to be familiar with. It's one of these training camp signings, things like that. He went to the University of Kansas. He's got decent size and 6'8", kind of plays power forward more than anything else. But this is a guy who in 2015-2016 with Portland, in 8 games, averaged just 4.5 minutes and didn't take a 3-pointer pretty much. So it's not exactly, you know, when you look at everything here, no 3-pointers, took 10 total field goal attempts. And managed to get 10 points off of those 10 total field goal attempts. But his career averages of 1.3 points per game in his, what do we say, 8 games. It's not encouraging. Like, I think this is just a body to have in camp here. Nothing, you know, just didn't pan out whatsoever. And it's a little bit sad because he did have a lot of potential, but he didn't even do that well at Kansas. Not getting the minutes that everyone thought he should probably get. And with just a handful of minutes in the NBA, I mean, come on, this is like, you have a better chance of making the, or as good of a chance maybe of making the Pelicans as he does. So I want to rule him out. The other guy that's been brought into camp on a training camp deal is an established veteran, and we know this coaching staff really likes those type of guys, and that's Martell Webster at 6'7". He's a small forward, has been in the league for a number of years now, And overall, you have to kind of like what he could potentially add to the team if they're looking for wing depth rather than guard depth. And let me touch on that in a second as I'm getting all over the place here. Career 38.2 3-point shooter on a career 3.6 attempts per game. So volume's okay. Averages 8.7 points per game. Hasn't been in the league, though, since 2014-2015. So 2 years. Not ideal. But hey, you know, we saw what happened to Jordan Crawford, instant grits, taking 2 years off and then coming back into the league. And overall, I mean, Martell Webster is a safe player. You know, he might not be great anymore. You know, he's going to be 31 at some point during the season. But he has some injury history. You've got to wonder if he's going to be able to stay healthy. And frankly, he'd be a one-trick pony out on the court in shooting threes, and that's it. If you just need it for that, run a three-guard lineup and go with Jordan Crawford, who's way more consistent, younger, who you feel just a bit better about, and is on a decent contract, too. Decent as in, like, very, very cheap. So there's no reason to pick a guy like Martell Webster for his three-point shooting over Jordan Crawford, unless you think Crawford is absolutely not going to be able to maintain even a semblance of this, of his form from last season, this coming season. Then maybe you make the move, but also you have one established player versus a non-established player. I don't think it's wise to go for a positional fit just to say you can get some wing depth to have a taller player there by a couple of inches than keeping the established guy on a good contract. That's not the move I'd make. You know, so all of those hoping that either Perry Jones or Martell Webster would make the team, it's not going to happen. It's going to be Jordan Crawford. And even though I think Crawford has a tenuous at best status on this team, they might look to trade him for a second round pick just to clear some space or shed some salary if they determine he's going to be surplus throughout the season. But there's worse things, you know, you could have out there than having him on your roster as the final guy on the bench. He's not really going to get many minutes anyway. Now, before I get to Jrue Holiday, the role, and some of the things that Rajon Rondo said at practice yesterday, I want to tell you guys another podcast to listen to, and I'm going to be doing this daily for you all. Listen to Locked On Lakers. Lonzo Ball is a bit of a polarizing figure, I think it's safe to say, with all of that, mainly because of his dad, LeVar Ball. But Lonzo Ball out there in Los Angeles, second overall pick, you know, supposedly in scrimmage, he led a team to a 3-0 record against, with no other Lakers starters on there. And that's pretty interesting. And it's going to be, you know, I'm curious to see how he plays out. Is he going to be like live up to the hype? Is he going to be as good as people think he is? Or is he just going to fail? And are we kind of rooting for him to fail because his dad is so damn annoying? But they're covering it all over there on Locked On Lakers. So definitely make sure you listen to that podcast. Again, Locked On Lakers. Learn more about Lonzo Ball. The Pelicans play them in like the third game of the regular season. So get some insight on how he's going to be carrying that Los Angeles Lakers team.
Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
So quick training camp update, because I know a lot of people have been asking about this as well. And one of the big things we saw at practice the other day was Darius Miller out there with the starters playing that small forward spot, likely to space the court. But when you saw them in five-on-fives, there were some issues. Like, spacing wasn't good. Davis and Cousins down low with a lot of guys around him and still other people kind of open. And maybe they're working through some things. They want to simulate this. But still, the spacing didn't look too good. You know, there's not, we want to talk about cutters with this team, and that's what, there's my transition, because Rajon Rondo was talking about how Jrue Holiday is one of the best cutters he's ever played with. Tony Allen's known for cutting, though he doesn't finish well with it, but he's capable of doing it. This team has a lot of guys who can cut and work off ball. Frank Jackson's one of them as well when he comes back healthy. But when you have two big men down low and, you know, it's, you catch the ball and you're driving, you need room to get to the rim. And if spacing's bad because teams are just hugging down low on Davis and Cousins, you've got to pull one out of the paint. which is a less efficient use of those two guys. Though I think the high-low game with them can actually be really well, and you can space the court properly with those guys. We've seen it with the Spain offense in Eurobasket, so I'm not as worried about them not being there. But cutting and having all of that room doesn't do, or having guys who cut doesn't do you a lot of good if you don't have the room to do it. This is the key to Jrue Holiday. I've written about this extensively last year, and the biggest thing wasn't that he's not aggressive. Everyone says he needs to be aggressive. They want him to be aggressive, get the ball out of his hand so he doesn't need to make a decision. He can just catch it, cut, and go, and he doesn't need to try and decide which, you know, pass to make. He almost being too cerebral on the perimeter of everything. And, you know, it's I'm losing my train of thought here, but if he can just catch and go, if he can just catch the ball and go, it works really well. It doesn't, though, because last season they tried this, especially before they put Tim Frazier out there when he's doing a bit of everything. But he had games where he had 6-7 turnovers at times. That came because he drove into like two dudes down low and there was no room for him to do anything. He just hit a wall and turned the ball over because there were so many bodies kind of knocking it free. That's the issue with the spacing. It's not, does it only work for Davis and Cousins? It's, can the cutters survive because they need places to go? And if they're cutting, they get the ball and they hit three defenders. The hell are they supposed to do? I think this gets lost on people at times. So yes, while it's great to have cutters, you do need to space the court properly for them as well. And I still worry about this. I think Holiday will be good cutting, will be okay being aggressive. But man, if the spacing still isn't there, he's going to have some issues. But you can see just by these comments that he is going to be less of a ball handler and more of a two guard. And I think that is totally okay. Rondo being the floor general that everyone has raved about so far in his court vision and the ability to get people the ball and just making the game easier. Screw it. Let him be the point guard. There's no reason for him not to be your lead guard in the backcourt with Holiday. Let Holiday do other things. He's been a good spot-up three-point shooter in those situations. He doesn't show a great three-point percentage, but that is going to be including off the bounce, off the dribble threes, and that's not what you want him to do. So I certainly think that he can thrive as a spot-up shooter in a different type of role. That's what they're hoping to get out of him. We're going to see more as we hit this first preseason game coming up next week, but I'm still concerned about him catching and driving and cutting. I think he's still more of a spot-up shooter in this offense, which is what he was after the trade was made last year. They're all saying otherwise. I'm going to believe it when I see it because those turnovers and everything were quite bad for the Pelicans and really tanked them in some of those early games after the DeMarcus Cousins trade. So I want to switch gears to something that hopefully won't impact the Pelicans next season, but is important nonetheless. And it sounds like the NBA Board of Governors, according to Adrian Wojnarowski over at ESPN, at Woj ESPN, has changed some of the lottery draft. They're calling it the draft lottery reform, basically. And it's kind of to prevent tanking. And basically what it more or less does is just equalize kind of the top three teams and then actually improve lottery odds for teams 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 and so on. It makes them a little bit better, not a ton better, but kind of better than they were before. And, you know, one of the reasons basically is to disincentivize tanking. So the biggest change is the team 1, 2, and 3 in the bottom worst standings, so the worst three teams, now have an equal 14% chance at the number one overall pick. Before it went 25%, 19.9%, and 15.6%. So those odds are lower for everyone in the top three, and then it increases for the rest of the teams in the lottery all the way to team 14, which has the same odds of 0.5 of a percentage. So team 4 jumps to 12.5% from 11.9%. Team 5 is at 10.5% of having the number one overall pick instead of 8.8%. Team 6 is at 9% instead of 6.3%, and so on. So it improves their odds. The top three of landing a top three pick, those, until you hit teams 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 in the lottery standings, and I guess 5 really, kind of. They're all largely increased. So each of the top or the worst three teams in the lottery reform now have a 40% chance of landing a top three pick. That is down from 64%, 56%, and 47%. And then the fourth team as well now has a 37% chance of a top three pick instead of a 38% chance, which, okay, that's about even. And then team five actually improves to landing a top three pick. They're at 32% instead of 29. Team six is 28% instead of 22. Team seven, 23 instead of 15. And then team eight at 19% instead of 10%. They're improving that middle of the pack. So instead of being just like Sixers bad, basically to tank and get the number one overall pick, you still have a very good chance at landing a high lottery pick if you're just like remotely bad instead of just absolutely horribly bad. That's the reform here. It's easier to be kind of in the middle of the pack in that 5, 6, 7, 8 range than it is to be the first worst, second worst, or third worst team. So this way, it kind of makes it, okay, maybe don't just lose every game on purpose. Just throw out young guys and try and win and at least be entertaining, as opposed to throwing out like aging NBA vets that are just going to piss everyone off. Fans will get behind young prospects on the court. They won't get behind dudes like Emeka Okafor on the Sixers now out on the court playing. That's the difference here. I kind of like it. I don't think it actually makes it harder to rebuild. Anyway, there's still a large degree of luck that you cannot account for, or you can account for it, but you know, it's not, if you do just base everything on it, you know, that's what it is. It's accounting for it and then, you know, kind of relying on it. If you rely on it, it's not going to work. Here, though, if you're decently bad and you're kind of stuck in that neutral middle ground of not being the worst team, one of the three worst teams in the league, but not making the playoffs, you might feel a little bit better about your lottery odds and the ability to kind of grab a star player and turn the team around. I kind of like it. I don't think this fixes everything with tanking. Obviously, tanking's, you know, still going to be around. You're still going to try and lose games. Maybe you just disguise it a little bit better than the 76ers did. So I don't outright hate this move and kind of like it, but I certainly don't think that it fixes anything as well. Or it doesn't, you know, it does fix it somewhat. It just doesn't completely fix it. It's still a system that people will game, that GMs will kind of work around. But I don't know if that's something you're ever going to be able to get rid of in the NBA. So that's going to do it for this week of Locked On Pelicans podcast. I will be back with you all on Monday, diving in and starting to prep you all for the first preseason game on October 3rd. That's coming really, really fast. That's on Tuesday. So Monday's podcast, we'll be talking about that. Tuesdays, we'll preview the game a little bit. I'll give you some things to keep an eye on for. That game's going to be in the Smoothie King Center. I'm excited to be there. It's always nice to hear like the music playing, seeing even what's probably not going to be that great of a crowd. But overall, it's going to be a very nice thing. So thank you all for listening to the podcast this week. I'm your host, Jake Madison, at Nola Jake on Twitter. Please like, subscribe, follow the podcast, and rate it 5 stars on iTunes. And I'll be back with you all on Monday.